You're listening to Sirens, a true crime podcast brought to you by the Sirens Network. This podcast contains explicit content, so listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed on this podcast are solely the views of the hosts and do not reflect the views of affiliates, associates, or sponsors of this podcast. A break from our regular programming for this special episode. Raven's Reviews.
All right. Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well, thank you. And you?
I'm good. I'm doing good today. I'm glad you were able to meet up with me, talk about books a little bit.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
All right. So Raven here today. I have Sean M. Warner with me today on this special episode of Raven's Reviews. And we're going to talk a little bit about your books. I know that you have one out now. It is called Lee Howard and the Ghosts of Simmons Pierce Manor. You also do have one coming up. So let's talk about all the things. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you.
So I'm not sure if many people discovered you the same way I did, which was on TikTok. And I saw this video that went viral. It was so heartwarming. Like, I think I cried probably two or three times. And I was like, I don't care what he writes at that point, because normally we do crime, we do horror, and we do true crime on this podcast. I was like, I don't care what he writes, get him on the show. And then when I found out what you write, and it's right in that wheelhouse, I was like, yes, we have to get him on this show. So tell me a little bit about that experience.
Sure. So I'm a part of a program that Kroger's grocery stores put on. It's called Authors in the Grocery Store, and it allows you to go into their stores and sell your books. And I was at a particular Kroger's, and I had been there all day, literally hours. But people, if you're a writer, you know, you sit at your desk, at your table for these book signings for hours on end. And sometimes you're swamped with people, and other times you're invisible.
It's
just how it goes. It's part of the business.
Yeah.
So there was a lull in the store, so that equated to a lull at my table. And Jared came by. And the nicest man ever. And he saw me sitting there alone selling my books. And he said he had a TikTok channel and asked if I would mind if he made a video to post on it. And he was going to buy a book for a giveaway. I said, no, of course, I'm just sitting here. If I can help you out. And he thought he was helping me out, which he obviously did. Neither one of us had any idea what was going to come of it. And he posted his video, and it just went viral in like 24 hours. It was just amazing.
Were you a TikToker at that time? Were you like marketing and stuff on TikTok?
No, I really wasn't. I'm not a big social media person. I'm learning how to do that. But, you know, at that point, I was just trying to get some traction. It's hard to be on social media when you don't have a following to begin with. I felt my time was better spent out in public, which clearly it was. It turned out well for me.
Yeah.
And just for the other authors and writers out there, just to show getting out in public. Earlier that very same day, I was invited to come speak out at the women's prison in Fort Worth.
Oh, wow.
And so I gave two talks there, one to their minimum and then one to their maximum security women at the penitentiary. And it was an honor to be there. But that happened because I was out in public. So for me, that physical presence of being somewhere was more important than being on social media, since I didn't have a following and I didn't expect to just magically get one.
Right. So
it was being out in public, I think, and then the stars aligned, and Jared, the nice guy, just made that video.
That's awesome. Did you know him at all? He was a complete stranger, right?
Total stranger. I was not even at the closest Kroger to my home, and he stopped in. I think he's had a birthday party going on, and they were running a little low on ice cream. It was a kid's birthday party. He was on an ice cream run.
Oh, wow.
And he just saw me sitting there looking bored because, like I said, I'd been there, you know, 4 to 6 hours at this point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're all day. You get there in the morning and you sit at your table till, you know, say you get there at 8 or 9 in the morning. You're there till 5 or 6 in the afternoon. Typically,
holy
you don't
cow.
Take a lunch break and you work it. The hardest hurdle for a writer is to get noticed and to get your name out there. And, you know, it's almost like Horton hears a who. We are here. We are here. We are here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad that he found you. I'm glad that he stumbled upon your table that day. We all got the joy of seeing that take place. And then, mm-hmm. of course, we now get the joy of reading your books, which I'm a little behind. So I will admit I have not read it yet, but I do have it. And okay. I will be reading it because it is right up my alley. So I want to you to tell me a little bit first about yourself, because this is like your first big book, right? Like, when did you start your writing?
Yeah, this is my debut novel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I started writing when I was 6 years old.
Aw.
It's kind of a funny story. My mother was reading these Billy and Blaze adventure stories to me. You know, little kid books with pictures. And this is a story of a boy and his horse and the adventures he had. It's by an author named Anderson. And I remember laying on my bedroom floor with a Big Chief pad. This is back when you learned cursive. So we had the dotted line in the middle so you could gauge how high to make your capitals and your lowercase.
Oh, I know cursive.
And yeah, that was the first time I tried to write a Billy and Blaze story. I don't know what I wrote. I'm sure it was dreadful. And, you know.
I'm sure it was adorable.
You know, it's funny you say that. We found my mother had kept a story that I wrote. I think it was in the third grade or something like that, this story I wrote. And the teacher wrote, this is really good writing and all this other stuff. But the first words, this is, remember, third grade's like 9 years old. And the first opening sentence was, I was sitting in a bar. Oh, the story gets better because this was at parochial school, a private Catholic school.
Oh, no. Oh, no. How much trouble did you get into?
None.
Oh, my God.
None for that. I got in a lot of trouble over the years in school, but none for that. So they were really messing with my writing.
That is so funny.
So I've been writing on and off ever since then, mostly as a hobby or, you know, I get an idea in my head and it's like, I really need to write this. And I never finished it. And it just went on and on back and forth until about 15 years ago when our family decided that I would stay home and homeschool our two kids. Mm. So I started homeschooling them in about the third or fourth grade. And that's when I decided also that I'm really going to take writing seriously. And of course, that means for everybody, study the craft of writing.
Right. Study
writing. And there's no way around it. I don't care if you get your MFA or if you do it on your own, you're going to put in those classroom hours one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wrote while I was homeschooling my kids. And after they graduated high school and went into college, I started submitting things. So it was a long journey. It looks like an overnight success. And I know a lot of people look at different authors who break through and say, oh, that's an overnight success. They do not see the years of effort.
Oh, yeah.
I like writing to pottery. You know, and the first thing you do in a pottery class is you make an ugly ashtray or pinch pot. And so I got a whole drawer full of ugly ashtrays.
That's one of my questions that I was going to ask you, is the book that you put out, your debut novel, is that what you started with? And if not, do you still have that first manuscript like stuffed in a closet or a desk or something somewhere?
Yeah, it's on a This is the 21st century. It's on a folder in my it's on a folder on an external hard drive.
Thanks for making me feel old.
Well, that wasn't my intention, but, you know, trust me, it's all this gray. And if you're feeling old, what does that say about me?
Oh, man, I'm telling you, it's a lot to keep up with these days. I mean, when you're independent, you're everything. You yes. are marketing, you are yes. writing, editing, publisher. I mean, you're mm-hmm. everything, book designer, everything.
Right. If you're self-publishing, yes, you are. And the trend is, and you know, this is the big, big, you know, eye-opening moment for a lot of people I speak to, because even if you get with the big five, the Simons and Schusters and the Random Houses and stuff like that, they're tightening their budgetary belts too. So authors are more on the hook for their marketing, for their editing. People don't realize that. You know, you're not getting the same level of editing out of the big five that you got 5-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Agents aren't accepting work that has not been edited to a highest degree. One agent made a quote the other day that most of her rejections are because of the technical nuts and bolts of editing, and it's just too much work downstream to bring it up to standard. So that's true of self-publishing. You're on the hook for all of it, but it's also true industry-wide.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a burden that authors are expected to pick up, which is a shame because we don't make anything.
I know it. And I'm telling you right now, I think most of us go into it not knowing that we're going to have to market ourselves.
I think that's true.
A nightmare.
I think that is absolutely true. I think there's a lot of hidden, I don't want to say pitfalls, but surprises, you know, that yes, you do have to go and sit at these book signings. Yes, you do have to cold call half price books or independent bookshops and let them know you exist. And then most authors, this is really a quirky thing about authors. Most of us are introverts. Not true across the board, but most authors are introverts. Well, guess what? You better flip that switch and learn to be an extrovert and greet people and cold call. Because I learned early on at a book signing, if you just set up a table and sit there, I have this magical power of turning invisible.
I feel that. I think we might share that power.
Yeah, so you have to be able to turn that switch on, even if it's against your nature. And it's hard to do. You know, fortunately, with my military background, I have a lot of experience of, you know, yelling at people.
Well, you there know? You go.
So I can turn it on whenever, but I'm never comfortable doing it. People think I am. Mm-hmm. I'm never comfortable doing it. So it's just some part of the business that you have to accept.
I don't really know how I got myself into this situation because I'm super introverted. And then here I am. And I think the thing that gets me through it is, oh, I'm talking to someone who loves the things that I love. I could talk about books all day long.
Yeah, I was. So Jared and I were blessed to be invited on the Today Show.
Oh, wow.
They flew us out to New York. We were on the Today Show, and sitting in the green room where they put you to wait before you go on set, I was terrified. I was pacing. Oh. I was nervous. My palms were sweating. My wife was, you know, it's going to be all right. She's trying to, you know, talk me off the ledge. And, you know, I have the best wife ever. You know, so she's trying to keep me calm and keep my mind going. And stuff. Once I got out on the set, and I sat in that couch, it was just a conversation with another human being about, like you said, the things we love, the books, what's my story, how did it happen, and things like that. And we were just having a conversation. But, you know, what's that thing from, I think it's from The Art of War, anticipation of death is worse than death itself.
Oh, yeah.
So true.
That's a fact. Yeah, you know what? I think that, I kind of implement that too, because it's like I get really nervous. Like, and I am also a little awkward upon entry into these conversations. And then once you realize that we're all just humans here and we're all just trying mm-hmm. to do something we love and make an impact on one, two, maybe mm-hmm. three humans in the world. Mm-hmm. It gets a lot easier.
Yeah. Once you get going, it gets easier, but it's just getting us started. But that's like writing a book too, that, you know, getting the book started is the hardest part. And then, after that, if you're fortunate, it flows.
Yeah. So what did you told me you were staying at home when you started writing.
Yes.
What else have you done in your, did you have a career somewhere? Did you do something in creative arts, anything like that?
I went after high school. I say that immediately after high school is when I decided to run away from home. I have a mild dyslexia and mild attention deficit without hyperactivity, which means mm-hmm. none of it gets noticed. And so I knew I was struggling, but I also knew I was better than what people were projecting for me, if that makes sense. You know, I was having a really hard time and I was working for my C's and D's just as hard as the honors kids were working for their A's and B's. But I knew these kids. I knew they weren't smarter than me. so there was something there. There was something going on. And I was able to recognize that. So immediately after high school, I ran away from home and I joined the Army. And I was a paratrooper in the infantry.
Oh, wow.
Thank you
for your service. Oh,
thank you so much. I appreciate that. After I got out of the military, I just did my first enlistment and I moved on. I went to college and I got a degree in psychology and a master's degree in social work.
Wow. And I did
family pediatric counseling and therapy in inpatient psychiatric settings for years.
Oh, wow. So
that industry kind of went down a path that I didn't want to follow. I was also newly married and we were having kids on the way. So I went back to school again and I got an engineering degree.
Oh, wow.
completely different direction. And I worked in some high tech projects for a few years. And then, like I said, we made the decision I would stay home and homeschool my kids. They were closing where I was working at the time was closing down. We made the decision I would just stay at home, homeschool the kids. And like I said, that's when I started writing. I would have started writing much earlier, but all along the way, I kept hearing things like, you know, Sean writes really, really well, but you can't make a living at that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not true. It's a hard living and it's not going to go exactly the way you think it might. Like Stephen King, for example, he taught high school English for years before he broke in. And he mm-hmm. wrote small articles for magazines and things like that before he got his big break. Mm-hmm. So you can make a living in the arts and writing, but it's just going to be, it's not a straightforward path as like climbing a corporate ladder. I think that's what they were trying to say, but they said it in a way that discouraged me from pursuing it at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of us have heard that. I think it comes to anything that comes to the arts. It's like, you'll never make mm-hmm. a living. You'll never make it. You have to do something, quote unquote, mm-hmm. sustainable. And a lot of us just give up on those things. And then we mm-hmm. find ourselves middle-aged, and wanting to jump back into those things.
Yeah. I was, you know, when Lee Howard and The Ghost of Simmons Pierce Manor was first published, I was 57. So it's never too late to follow your passions or your dreams. If it comes to you, it's like I remember a Cadfile episode about this older monk and he said that, you know, I came to the priesthood when I was called, and that's how this is. You'll come when you're called. But you have to listen and you have to follow through. But it is a shift and it is frightening.
Yeah, it's a very scary thing to kind of, especially if you don't know what to expect. I feel like I'm privileged in a way that I have created a platform where I get to speak with authors all the time. I get to ask them questions and I get to pick their brains like I'm doing right now with you.
Slim pickings then.
I feel like I might have like a leg up on that, and a lot of people don't. And what I love about this podcast, allowing me to do, you know, these little Ravens reviews where I interview people like you who are doing things that they love, is that we can impart that to people who don't have those resources, or the people that, you know, need to ask questions or are feeling uncomfortable or don't know what they should do. Well, here we are. We're telling you, you know, there's plenty of us out there just trying to make it, just trying to do what we love to do.
Yeah. I mean, you just need to, but it's like anything else, though. You need to go into it with your eyes open. You know, you need to be aware of what's going on and what's going on around you. It's like, if you're going to be an actor, you need to be aware of how competitive that field is and how few make it huge. You know, for every Keanu Reeves, there's hundreds of bit actors and commercial actors and stuff like that, you know? So it's, you need to be aware of the realities of it, and you need to cover all your bases. I'm very fortunate that I went through the social work track and had that career, and I have the engineering background. So I have marketable skills, and there is a fallback for me if I need it.
Right.
You know, I mean, rent and food are real things. You know, so you just need to be very aware, and you have to have a plan for how you're going to move forward. And most writers that I know, this is a second career job kind of thing. They have their day job, and then they're doing this, and they're trying to break through, and they're hoping that it will eventually become a sustainable thing, and they can flip those two around. But yeah, it's, I mean, it's work, but it's supposed to be work because it's work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is my first job. My second job is writing. My third job is audiobook narrating. So we're all just trying to make it here.
and there you go. That's exactly how you do this, is you have a portfolio. One of the turning points for me in writing was when I made the realization that as a writer, I am a small business. This is a business. It is an industry. Publishing is an industry. And all of a sudden, when I started looking at that, rejection letters, which are so painful, but I was able to view them not as critiques so much on my writing or my concept or my story, but on a business decision, marketing. Right. Who's going to sell this to? Where's it going to go? Where's it going to sit on the shelves? What do the what does the financial analysis look like for books that are similar to this?
Right. You know, yeah.
What's the readership projection supposed to be? They're business decisions. They're not personal slights on you or critique necessarily of your writing. That's something that critique groups are for, and everyone should be in one. But the rejection letters from agents, they're 90% of the time they're not. You know, oh, your writing is terrible and I want nothing to do. It's more of, I don't know how I'm going to market this. I don't know who I'm going to pass this upstream to. I don't know who's going to publish this. I don't know. I'm not seeing a demographic that is going to purchase this. It's a business decision from the agent's standpoint. And that really made things a lot easier and a lot clearer, in, at least in my mind.
Did you start in your mind thinking that you wanted to go the traditional route, or did you kind of always know you?
I've always wanted to do me, but how that looks is I don't really care, because I'm an obstinate old coot. I'm going to be me no matter where I am. again, that's the military coming out. You know, I do me under all circumstances. But yeah, I mean, I tried getting an agent and going the traditional route, and that didn't work out. I really wasn't interested in the self-publishing because I didn't know anything about typesetting, font, page layouts, and those kind of aesthetics are part of the self-publishing thing. So I went, my wife suggested an indie author, Black Rose, or indie publisher, Black Rose Writing. And I'm thoroughly happy with them. They have treated me very fairly, openly, and honestly through all of this. We're very supportive through it all. So I have no complaints about that.
That's awesome. So tell me what happened after the TikTok went viral. You went on, what'd you say, the Today Show?
It was on the Today Show, yeah.
The Today Show. Anything else?
Well, a lot of things. Inside Edition, after the Today Show, the Inside Edition wanted us walking around Times Square, and I was in a different city altogether, wasn't I? I was in London. they wanted us walking around Times Square and making commentary and things like that. I've had local news out. Just yesterday, I was pumping gas at the gas station and somebody pokes her head out there. Aren't you that author? Maybe. It depends on what book you're talking about. Maybe.
Now, let me ask you a question about that real quick, because I think that is one of the things that we don't think about when we get into this, because I've had people who have recognized my voice in the grocery store, and mm-hmm. people who will just come up and fangirl. And I'm like, so for it to be like this big thing on TikTok, and then all of a sudden you have people recognizing you, was that just wild? Like, how did you deal with that?
Well, I just took it in stride. It happens, and TikTok is a huge medium, you know, and so I just have kind of resigned myself. Yeah, I'm that TikTok guy. He goes, hey, aren't you the TikTok guy? Yeah, that's me, you know, and which is fine. That's how they know me. That's how they saw me. And I'm perfectly okay with that. You know, everyone that I've met has been, by and large, respectful, has been genuinely happy for me and for how things have turned out for me. And so it's never anything, I don't feel like I'm being intruded upon, at least I haven't yet. You know, and everybody who has been a follower on TikTok or in other places and they come up and see me, I have to bear in mind, they've been very supportive of me. They deserve a little bit of my time to, hi, hello, yeah it's me. You know, did you read the book? Do you like the book? And, you know, they deserve a little bit of something back for all the support and love that I've been shown since that's happened.
Yeah, that's really refreshing to hear. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about your writing process, because every author I've ever talked to, including me, we probably have this completely different processes. And I mm-hmm. always find it so interesting to hear other writers' processes. So what's your process? Do you have any quirks? Do you have to like be in a dark room, or do you have to have a certain sound playing, or, you know, anything like that?
No, nothing like that. my process is pretty simple. I've been blessed with a very vivid imagination. And so when I'm driving, or it's amazing I haven't wrecked my car, I engage in these kind of fantasy imaginary play. And I think that's one of the perks of this business, is we get to, you know, at all stages in our lives, we still are allowed to look at the clouds and imagine dogs and dragons and angels up there out of the clouds. And that's part of the job, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I have this imagination kind of thing going on, scenes, conversations, or whatever. I don't write those down. I wait for them to be recurring thoughts or imaginations or characters that come up over and over again. And those are the ones I start paying attention to. Mm-hmm. And then I start, once I say, you know, this has come up a few times, I should listen. I start what I call the what if game. Mm-hmm. You know, so for example, and I hope I'm not spoiling this, but for Lee Howard, you know, well, what if there's this girl whose parents were murdered and she wants to solve that mystery? Okay. What if she goes and lives in this house with these like uber rich people she never knew she was related to? Yeah, been there. That's kind of a tired storyline, but oh, it could work. Yeah, but what if that house was haunted? Uh-oh. Yeah, what if it is haunted? Okay. Well, what if the ghost had like multiple personalities, showed up as kind of different people, but it was the same ghost? Okay, this has legs. It's going to work.
I love that idea, by the way. I've never in all the reading I've ever done heard of anything like that before. And I love that concept. So
after that, you know, there's some other things that go into it, but I'm a hybrid writer. We hear about plotters and pantsers. Yeah. I think it's okay to still say
pantsers,
that.
Pantsers, yeah.
Yeah. I heard, no, we're hybrid writers. You're a pantser. I'm a little long in the tooth for that game. you know. So there's plotters and there's pantsers, and I'm in between. I'm a hybrid writer. Well, what that means is when I have these things and I decide a story could possibly work, I'll sit down and write the first chapter, maybe the opening scene of where they start out. And then I may write the last scene of the book. I will at least have it in my mind where I want this character to end up. because I, especially now in more and more and more, I'm appreciating, you know, we hear about the A story and the B story, where story is the plot stuff and the B story is the character's arc. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very much beginning to flip that, where the A story is my character's arc. That's the most important part of the story. The B story, the plot part, are pressure points that just keep squeezing my character down that tube of change until they come out that the back end changed and different.
That's very interesting.
So this is kind of new to me. So you're hearing it, you know, pretty much for the first time here. It's just a revelation that I had. Yeah, it's just an idea that I've had that these plot points, it really is the character story of change and arc and that sort of stuff. And these amazing plot points, and I can't, you know, I'm not going to discredit that. Mm-hmm. The power of the plot, because that's what's really is going to drive the story and keep it interesting. But it's that growth and change that really should be the focal point and have that emotional, deep connection with your main character and the change that they go through.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of why I do the first and the ending, because I want to see where the arc is going to take me. Mm-hmm. And then in between, I write a little, plot a little, write a little, plot a little, and just go back and forth.
So how long did it take you to, from start to finish, with Lee Howard?
It was about 6 to 8 months, I think. You know, the writing and then the polishing and the editing and to getting it to the point when I submitted it to the independent publisher, and then all the rejections I got along the way. And then, of course, you're never done editing and fixing and polishing. So I was submitting, and I was also making more edits and submitting and changing and working. So right up until, I mean, honestly, I think, and most writers I know, I think, do this, right up until you sign that dotted line saying no more changes will happen in this book, it's evolving, it's changing, it's growing, it's polishing.
And you do have, or are you still working on your next one right now, or
no,
is it done?
It's done. It's with the publisher. It's due out June 4th.
Oh, wow.
So just a few weeks away, really. It's called Homeland Insecurity, and it's the story of a group of teenagers who grow up dreaming of being spies, but before they're ready, get caught in the crosshairs of an international terrorist. Young adult, fast-paced fantasy adventure, you know, not fantasy, but young adult action adventure story.
Crime thriller.
If you want to look at it, yeah. So it's the interesting thing is I was working on Homeland Insecurity. And remember I said I get these imaginations, recurring things in my head. Well, Lee got into my head and she stamped her little foot as if my brain were a puddle. And she said, "You're going to write me." And I was so obsessed with her character and her story, I had to pause my work on Homeland Insecurity.
Oh, wow.
Write Lee Howard so I could clear the jumble out of my head and get back to finish Homeland Insecurity. It's a great thing that I did, obviously. But that's why you kind of have to listen to where you're being led just as much as you need. You can't just be all willy-nilly and, you know, chase every little butterfly that comes your way. But You also need to listen to what your imagination is telling you to go, where it's telling you to go, where it's driving you.
So I had a question. I think you've already answered it. It was going to be what comes first, the plot or the character, but I think you've already answered that.
With me, it's the character. Other people, it's the plot. For mm-hmm. other people, like sci-fi and fantasy, right. it's the world yeah. building. It's the where they're trying to create comes first. And it doesn't really matter in the end where mm-hmm. it starts, because every single piece of that needs to be in place before you're going to have a successful novel. You're going to need to do your character work, your background sketches, their personality profiles, and all this other stuff. You're going to need to know your settings, where it is, what's happening, who's in the house, how things are laid out. And you're going to have the world building, whether it's, you know, fortunately, I write in contemporary settings and stuff. So I just look out my window and read the news and I see what my world is. Yeah. But other people, you know, if you're going to build a world. But the point is all those pieces have to be in place. So it doesn't matter if it's the chicken or the egg, because, you know, at the end, they all have to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. A final couple of questions I have for you here. Number one, do you have a way that you celebrate when you finish a book?
I take a day off. sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. I usually do take some time off. And it's more than just a day because it's a huge accomplishment. But also when you finish a book and there's stages of it, so it depends on what you mean by finishing. You start writing. It was a dark, stormy night, and you push all the way through to the end. Mm-hmm. And you get that first draft done. That's a huge win, and you should celebrate that. And I always caution people against editing while they're writing, because I think that's the road to failure. You've got to get the book out first, even if it's substandard because it's your first draft. It's going to be substandard. Mm-hmm. If you're not realizing that, you're not ready to be published, because first drafts are never final drafts, never. So there's little advantages, little victories along the way. And I always celebrate those by taking some time off, taking some space. First of all, because I need a break from mm-hmm. those characters. It's like being in a long road trip with family members. You love them to death, but you're sick of them by the time you get where you're going. You know, so I need a break, and I need fresh eyes and new excitement. So I take a break. I let it ferment. I write something else sometimes, a short story, or I get started on another piece or something, and then I'll go back and I'll start the editing phase, which is torture. And then when that's done, like each editing phase is done, I'll let it sit and percolate so I can come back with a fresh mind, more motivation. I'll do it again and again and again. That's just how editing works. Mm-hmm. You know, you literally, I tell people, you edit until you are so sick of it, you're going to be physically ill if you read that thing one more time, and then mm-hmm. you read it like a good dozen more times.
I'm sure every author can feel that.
I think so. Yeah. And then there's also, like we were talking about earlier, I think the role of getting an editor is a bigger role now on authors than it used to be.
Yeah.
So you have to, you know, choke down the, oh my gosh, it's so expensive. And it is expensive. But they're professionals too. And they have, you know, there has to be meat and potatoes on their family's table as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I get that. I just don't like it.
Yeah. You know,
we don't have to like reality. We just have to live within its confines.
Exactly. Exactly. So what do you think, other than the things that we've already discussed here today, what do you think would be like the biggest advice to other authors, maybe just starting their debut novel, just starting to figure out that they want to write? What is the biggest advice you think you can give them?
The biggest would be to study the craft. Take time to read different books on plot structure, on what makes a good book good. And, you know, this has been around since Aristotle's Poetics back in like 200 BC. So yeah, there's a volume of work to go through if you want to. More recent ones that are probably more benefit would be like Save the Cat Writes a Novel, or Story Engineering by Larry Brooks, or The Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell. That one's a slog to read. It's a very academic book. But that's where the hero's journey comes from. And it's a huge staple in the writing process. It's one version of it. So yeah, study the craft, read those different books, and then understand after you read a few of them that they all say pretty much the same thing. And we all learned it in third grade. It's the three-act structure. The difference is they all say it in a very different way. They frame it differently with different insights and different aspects. So you need to read and study enough of that craft till you find the language that talks to you that you feel you can incorporate into your books.
That's perfect. Perfect way to say that.
And then, just study the craft. Study the craft. And almost as important is join a critique group. People who, get over yourself. It's nerve-wracking to read your stuff. I'm actually leaving for a critique group here in a few minutes, and I'm going to read, several pages to them, and I expect to hear, well, this was good, but that wasn't, and which is why you go. That's exactly why you go. So, my writing, and my wife has said this to me before, it was amazing after I joined a critique group how much my writing improved.
Oh, wow.
Just from the feedback I was getting. I think they're indispensable to new writers and to authors who have been around for a while. I think they still have stuff to learn. I hope I never reach a point where I think I don't have anything left to learn. But also, it's an opportunity to give back because I get so frustrated when I hear writers say, oh, it's such an isolating industry. It's so lonely. And it's because you're making it that way.
Yeah.
Join, hie thee to a critique group.
Let me get your take on reviews. A lot of writers don't read their reviews. They just don't even want to look good or bad. They don't want to have any knowledge of what that's about. How do you feel about it?
I like, I read some of the reviews. Now on Amazon, I have over 7,000 reviews for Lee Howard and The Ghost of Simmons Pierce Manor, which is an insane number of reviews. There's no possible way
that's
I can read
awesome.
All of those.
That's awesome.
But
though.
I do skim through them. And my wife points a few out. The ones where they say that the book has gotten them back into reading, I kind of follow up on those and look at those because that, for me, that's part of my passion is I want to get people reading again, especially young people. So when I hear things like, oh, my kids, they don't ever read, but they loved your book. And it's like, when? A few of them have said, we're sitting down, we're reading this as a family, and we're talking about it. Exactly. That's exactly how it is.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's so heartwarming. But mostly I look at the overall rating, the stars numbers at the top, just to see general how it's going. I'm more inclined, of course, I don't want to say that because I'm going to like beg for bad reviews, but I do read a lot of the negative reviews because I do want to learn. So when people say, it wasn't, they could have used more editing or there was a plot hole here or something like that, I do take those into heart. When people are just ranting, you can tell pretty quick, this book was terrible. It was almost worked. That's like, okay, thank you for playing. Next one. I ignore those. And I've said this a few times, so obviously the military had a huge impact on me. If I was ever going to be offended, a drill sergeant would have done it years ago.
Well, that is so awesome. So glad that you sat down with me today.
Oh, it's an honor to be here.
I do want you to tell my listeners where they can find you. You have a website, right?
I do have a website. It's seanwarner.com. And you can go there. You can purchase signed copies of the book, and we will ship it with all the merchandise that comes with it. Homeland Insecurity is available for pre-order. And right now, I think there's a discount if you use pre-order 2024.
Awesome.
There's a discount, especially for independent publishers or independent bookstores. They can order in bulk and take advantage of that discount if they want to pre-order.
Yeah.
And that's where you can get signed copies. You can also get copies off of, I have a TikTok shop, at least for the moment. you can also get them on my book off of Amazon. And it's at barnesandnobles.com. Amazon carries them. The audio book is on Audible.
Oh, awesome.
And ebooks are on Amazon and are on Amazon as well. Yeah. And
awesome.
Like I said, pre-orders are available. You also read about a cruise. You ask how things have changed. I was invited to host a cruise. My mind was totally blown on this.
How crazy is that?
I know. It's just, you know, you're just sitting around and you get this phone call. You know, would you like to host a cruise and talk books and writing and your stories? You know,
that sounds amazing.
Cruise, it's going from Budapest along the Danube to Germany.
Oh, wow.
If we sell enough cabins, which, you know, I still don't know if we sold enough cabins because, you know, that's a pretty involved trip.
Yeah.
But it would be really nice if it makes. I would love to go. But I was asked to do that, you know.
That's so cool.
And just to give you an idea of how surreal life has become for me, after that, I went out in my backyard and I have dogs, so I picked up what dogs do. So very, very different on one side of my life is totally different than the other side. It's very much still the same.
That's so funny. Where, actually, what cruise is it? Maybe some listeners want to join this cruise.
The information is on my website.
Okay, cool.
And there's a whole tab for it. And it's a river cruise. It's not, I don't know why my mind is going blank. I feel so embarrassed now. It's not Viking, but it's one of their competitors. And it's just really an exciting thing. And I would, you know, I really want to go. I can't think of nothing better than to visit these places in Europe and then spend the evenings talking to book lovers about writing and about books, about my books, about their books if they've written them, and then go back out the next day. You know, there's a place in Venice where they serve a latte and a waffle cone. I have never heard of such a thing in my life, and I don't know how the cone is not getting soggy, but if we go, I am finding out how they serve that latte and a waffle cone.
Well, that sounds so awesome. I'm so happy for your success. I wish you all the success in the future. I'm so glad that I got to speak with you today. I just love your journey, and I plan on following it even further. So thank you so much for hanging out with me for a minute.
And thank you for inviting me on your show. It's been lovely.
Yeah, thank you so much. So everyone, we have been talking to Sean M. Warner about his books. You can find him at, what do you say, seanwarner.com?
seanwarner.com. Yeah, or you can type in Lee Howard and the Ghosts of Simmons Pierce Manor and it'll pop up too.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, please
go
stop by and say hello.
Go check out some books. I did want to mention, I think right now, Lee Howard is in the Kindle Unlimited. So if you guys have Kindle Unlimited, you can go and get that now and read it for free, which is awesome. Because it's almost like a library kind of situation there.
Yeah, just make sure you're flipping through it and you're reading it, because if you don't read a certain
the whole
amount,
thing.
if you don't read a certain percentage, authors don't get paid.
Correct.
You know, reviews, please leave reviews for your authors, any author, not just me, any author. It is such a huge part of our career to get the review numbers up. Good reviews or bad reviews, honestly, the algorithm does not care. They want to see the traffic. So right. if you want to support an author in any way, leave a review.
Yes, yes, do that.
An honest review Thank too. You. Don't it doesn't have to be good or bad. Honest review. Please leave a review yeah. for the authors that you read. That sounds great. Thank you so much for asking me to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. I really enjoyed this conversation. Again, I love author conversations, which is why I do this. So
yeah, it was fun. I thought we had a lot of fun.
I hope you have such a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Raven's Reviews. Catch more next time on the Sirens Podcast.